Hey, and welcome to The Living Stone, a digital ministry from Greystone Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. Here's this week's scripture reading and sermon.
Reading this morning from the book of Esther, chapter 4. When Mordecai learned all that had been done, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went through the city, wailing with a loud and bitter cry. He went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. In every province, wherever the king's command and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting and weeping and lamenting, and most of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's maids and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. Then Esther called for Hatak, one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what was happening and why. Hatak went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told Hatak that all that had happened to him and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave Hatak a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther, explain it to her, and charge her to go to the king to make supplication to him and entreat him for her people. Hatak went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hatak and gave him a message for Mordecai, saying, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law. All alike are to be put to death. Only if the king holds out the golden scepter to someone may that person live. I myself have not been called to come into the king for 30 days. When they told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all of the other Jews. For if you keep silent at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter. But you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this. Then Esther said in reply to Mordecai, go, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa and hold a fast on my behalf, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will also fast as you do. After that, I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
For such a time as this, if you keep silent in a time such as this, maybe you have been brought to royal dignity for a time such as this. For a time such as this. I used those words, like so many other people have used those words, as I wrote my very first letter to you in 2018. My intent was to draw attention to the particular moment that we shared as we decided to enter into that holy covenant of pastor and people. Perhaps the Spirit had stirred in my heart a desire to look for a new place of ministry at precisely the same time that that same Spirit was stirring in the heart of Greystone, creating something new. For such a time as this, I wrote and I wondered, has God been preparing us? Like I said, I'm not special or alone in my use of those words. In fact, I'd venture to say that most of us, if not all of us, have looked upon the events as they have unfolded in our lives, Or maybe stood in one place but looked backwards through our histories to see if there was any clarity there to answer the most burning questions that wake us up at night, that cause us to stress over decisions about opportunities or challenges that come our way. We ask, what are you doing with our lives, oh God? Why are these things happening to me or happening around me or happening to the people that I love? And then we look back and say, oh, maybe that's why. Maybe I had to go through that so that I might be prepared for a time such as this. I bet if we were to browse the spirituality section or maybe even the self-help section of our online or in-person bookstores, we would find a whole list of titles that reflected those famous words with their undeniable roots in the ancient Jewish novella that we know as the Book of Esther. Much like the other stories that we've been working through on Wednesday nights this fall, the story of Esther has been shaped and conveniently kind of changed into a nice, tidy story about how God used a courageous woman to save her people. Now, I like a story about a strong, courageous woman who saves her people, so I'm not here to take any of that away from us today. It's all well and good, except for that when that's the only story, it removes the complexity. It resolves the story itself of its messiness, its gravity, and I would even say its relatability for us as we navigate this messy human experience called life. Now, I'm going to call this a story because scholars agree that Esther is indeed a story. It is an ancient novella. You heard me use that word a minute ago, which means that it out of the Jewish tradition, this is a fictional narrative that is pulled together, not designed to meet any tests of historical accuracy. You hear that? A novella is a fictional piece of writing in prose, not designed to meet any tests of historical accuracy. And though we can make some good educated guesses about when the story might have been written or what was happening in the life of the ancient Jews during that time, the story itself eludes our historicity, we might say. But even as we sit with that uncomfortable reality, we remember a little bit of wisdom I'd like to share with you. It makes me remember a bit of wisdom that I picked up very early on in my theological education. A professor said, you know, he could feel that we were all getting anxious. The professor looked at us and said, hear this. Just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't true. Just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't true. So today, perhaps we might lean into that possibility. We don't know. And perhaps as we do that, we could liberate the story of Esther from its historicity. And maybe as we do that, we might begin to see its applicability to every time and every place. The novella is a fictional piece of writing, scholars say, not designed to meet any tests of historical accuracy, but remember, just because it didn't happen doesn't mean it isn't true. We do know some things that did happen, though. Around the time that the story emerges, we do know some things that did happen to the Hebrew people. They did, in fact, spend a significant amount of time living under foreign occupation. That is to say, living in Gentile territory with a Gentile king lording over them and demanding their utmost allegiance. Sometimes there were threats of persecution and even death if they did not obey. And sometimes, depending on the king or the whim of the king, there was a little bit more grace or leniency. Remember, we learn in the book of Isaiah, it was the Persian king Cyrus who invited the people to return from exile. But in today's reading, it's a different Persian king, one in a little bit of a different mood, we might say. This king is one that history would remember as King Xerxes I, who sits on the throne, and this king is not known for leniency and grace. A lot of difficult things happen in the story of Esther. It makes me wonder a little bit why it is so commonly adopted into a small little group of Bible stories that we like to kind of clean up and hand to our children. Just like the other stories we've studied on Wednesday nights, there is indeed a VeggieTales episode about Queen Esther. And I don't know about you, but I can certainly remember multiple weeks in vacation Bible school when I learned about Queen Esther, always Queen Esther, and her courage. And I don't want to take any of that away from her. But those versions that we learned as children are watered down versions, and they ignore the horrific events that unfolded in Esther's life, even in the story, and in the life of the Jewish people with whom she shares her ethnic heritage. As a woman living in the ancient world and as a member of an oppressed people, we have to remember Esther had no agency. Even the story itself shows that to us. She didn't choose to offer herself to the king's harem. That was the decision of her uncle, who was her guardian. Once chosen by the king, she wasn't even allowed to be her full self. No, she had to hide her ethnicity, her religion, which is to say she had to hide her identity because her uncle, who was her guardian, told her so and told her life depended on it. Once in the palace, she wasn't even free there. She wasn't free to rule as queen. She was kept in a chamber, almost like a house pet, waiting on the whim of the king to decide when it was time for her to come out and play. No, Esther didn't have any agency. And it's important that we remember that when we tell her story. If we read carefully, even the chapter from today, we see that she was so secluded, so isolated in her chamber, that she didn't even know about the plan to kill all the Jews. The edict that had been circulated throughout all the land didn't make it to Esther's room. She was kept in the dark until her uncle approached the royal gates wearing sackcloth and crying out in lament. Reminds us of Lady Wisdom, who cries out from the street corner. So Esther wasn't in a position of power. She was not free. She was a victim of the multiple overlapping oppressive systems that moved her through the story like a pawn. And yet somehow she becomes a hero. So what was it about Esther that moved her from being a victim to a hero? What is it about Esther's story that is a holy story? Some might say that it was her courage. I wonder if it wasn't her wisdom. Or maybe it was both. In one of my favorite books of all time, called The Courage to Be, the author Paul Tillich writes about the interconnectedness of courage and wisdom, saying that courage united with wisdom includes temperance in relationship to oneself, as well as justice in relation to others. Courage, when paired with wisdom, requires us to minimize ourselves and our tendency to focus only on self-preservation so that we might then work for justice for others. It reminds me of that old phrase that I probably learned in vacation Bible school, less of me, more of thee. Seems to me that maybe wisdom and courage are two sides of the same coin. Wisdom leads us to get our hearts and minds in the right place. That's the less of me part. And courage is the inevitable action that follows. You know, maybe courage is the embodiment of wisdom. We certainly see it in Esther as she discovers what is really happening underneath her own roof. The king has sanctioned a plan that will end in genocide, and while she is probably safe because her identity and her ethnicity have been kept secret, she has to be wondering, how can she let her own people die without intervening on their behalf? But at the same time, intervention would place her squarely in harm's way. She would be risking her life. As we think about it that way, a marginalized person, already oppressed, already undervalued, in a strange position with an opportunity to act with courage and power, reminds me of so many others throughout history who have found themselves in that same peculiar and holy place. One of them's name was Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a German pastor who fled Germany in 1939 at the invitation of Union Theological Seminary in New York City. After spending a decade, nearly, resisting Adolf Hitler's rise to power in his home country, after resisting the unholy fusion of nationalistic politics into the Christian religion and church, after stating boldly and prophetically that Christ was the head of the church in a world where Hitler was claiming that place for himself and Christian people were going along with it. After all of that, in 1939, Bonhoeffer accepted a position at Union Theological Seminary, and some hoped that he would come and wait out the war here and continue to speak out. But 2 weeks after his feet landed on American soil, after much inner turmoil, Bonhoeffer returned to Germany, and he wrote these words to his friend Reinhold Niebuhr. "I have come to the conclusion that I made a mistake in coming to America this time. I must live through this difficult period in our national history along with the people of Germany." Listen to this. "I will have no right to participate in the reconstruction of Christian life in Germany after the war if I do not share in the trials of my people. I will have no right to participate in the reconstruction of Christian life in Germany after the war if I do not share in the trials of this time with my people." He went on, "Christians in Germany will have to face the terrible alternative of either willing the defeat of their nation in order that a future Christian civilization might survive, or else willing the victory of their nation and thereby destroying our civilization and any true Christianity. I know which of these alternatives I must choose, but I cannot make that choice from a place of security." Like Esther, Bonhoeffer chose a path that united wisdom and courage. Like Esther, Bonhoeffer put his own life on the line for the sake of justice for others. Like Esther, Bonhoeffer minimized his own opportunity for self-preservation in order to dedicate his life to a greater good. We have the benefit of volumes of writing about Bonhoeffer's life and legacy. There's even a movie coming out November 22nd. I can't vouch for it. I haven't seen it. We have volumes, though, of written words about him and words written by him. Words that expose the inner struggle, the inner turmoil, all the tension as he vacillated between the basic human inclination toward self-preservation and the higher Christian calling toward sacrificial living. We don't have that many words about Esther. But we have to imagine that as she prayed and fasted alongside her people, the text tells us. We have to imagine that as she prayed and fasted alongside her people, there was a similar holy tension bubbling up within, an inner struggle that understood both the risk and the need for wisdom that was embodied as courage in a time such as hers. Thinking about all this week, I was reminded that there's a conference room at the Union Theological Seminary in New York where students sit for orientation. It's called the Bonhoeffer Room. And when I was 23 years old, I sat there as a first-year student. I'd like to say I was paying close attention to what whoever was talking was saying. I should have been listening to all the instructions being given that day, but I was distracted by an overwhelming sense of wonder because I had read Bonhoeffer's Letters and Papers from Prison, and I had read Bonhoeffer's The Cost of Discipleship. And so as I sat there in the room with the plaque outside that said the Bonhoeffer Room, I was overwhelmed by a sense of wonder if there might be a time for my own Bonhoeffer-like courage. And just as that possibility began to get a little scary, my privilege snapped me out of it. Snapped me back long enough to just thank God and to move on with my day. So I put it on the shelf, forgot about the moment. But as time has passed, and as society has grown more polarized, more violent, more motivated by hatred and fear, I often go back to that room and I wonder if I would even be able to recognize the moment when it happened. I wonder if I would be able to recognize the moment when Bonhoeffer-like courage and Esther-like wisdom are required. Would we know when that kind of courage merged with wisdom is needed? Who knows? Uncle Mordecai cried out from the street. Maybe you are here for a time such as this. It's a prophetic phrase unbound by any time or place. The very genre of the book gives us permission. It's a prophetic phase unbound by time or place, perhaps because it is true in every time and place, maybe even ours. Maybe we are here for a time such as this. In 1942, Bonhoeffer wrote some more words, and I want to share them with you today as a way of closing. Unless we have the courage to fight for a revival of wholesome reserve between one another as neighbors, we shall perish in an anarchy of human values. The impudent contempt for such reserve is the mark of rabble, just as inward uncertainty, haggling and cringing for the favor of insolent people, and lowering oneself to the level of the rabble are the way of becoming no better than the rabble itself. When we tolerate impudence for the sake of material comforts, we abandon our self-respect, the floodgates are open, chaos bursts the dam that we were there to defend, and we are all responsible for it. When when we tolerate impudence for the sake of material comforts. We abandon our self-respect. The floodgates are opened. Chaos bursts the dam that we were to defend, and we are all responsible for it. Friends, I believe that right now we are living in some Bonhoeffer moments. I believe we are living in some Esther moments. I believe that wisdom has left the building and we have traded our material comforts for the basic human dignity of our neighbors. We have turned our eyes from suffering. We have closed our ears to hateful rhetoric, and we have tried our best to allow our privilege to shield us from the pain of this world. But we were made for a time such as this. Friends, this is our time. It's the only time we have, and we are all responsible for it. We cannot allow chaos to burst through the dam that we are called to defend. The dam that shields the lonely and the poor and the immigrant and the orphan and the sinner and the outcast and the saint alike. The dam which is the uncompromising, indiscriminate love of God that holds us all together as one people. We cannot allow chaos to burst through. We have to somehow recognize the moment while we are in it and summon the courage to let wisdom be our guide so that we might share in the legacies of Bonhoeffer and Esther and countless others in between their time and ours. Those who recognize that love is the only way, that selflessness is the beginning of love, and that courage is the embodiment of wisdom. So God, give us wisdom. Give us wisdom, O God, for a time such as this. Amen.